All right, Crypt Nation fam, let's pause for 1 second and talk about an important issue going on right now, and that's SIM swap attacks. SIM swap attacks are becoming a serious threat, especially in crypto. If someone gets control of your phone number, they can access your bank accounts, your exchanges, emails, and even your private messages. That's why the Crypto 101 podcast is partnered with Afani. It's America's most secure mobile service, offering a guaranteed protection against SIM swaps with added privacy. Since launching, not one single Afani user has ever been SIM swapped. And for some reason, if it ever does happen, you're backed by up to $5 million in insurance against financial losses. This is literally why we chose to partner with them. It is our favorite thing about Afani is the insurance policy of up to $5 million if it does happen to you. Afani runs on either AT&T or the Verizon network, and you get to choose which one. There are no contracts, and it is super easy and seamless to sign up. You also get a 60-day money-back guarantee, so there's zero risk in trying it out. Right now, for our listeners, you get $99 off when you sign up at Afani.com/crypto101. That's Afani.com/crypto101, or check the show notes below for a link. These days, your phone number is probably more valuable than your social security number. So make sure it's protected with Afani. Welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast, presented by Gemini, your bridge to the future of money.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another action-packed, high-caliber episode here of the Crypto 101 podcast. I am fired the heck up. We have an incredible guest today, Brendan. Are you as fired up as I am?
Dude, I'm always fired up, but especially so for this one. We got a really exciting episode in store, and I think something that all the listeners are going to find pretty interesting.
Yeah, everybody who's listening has probably heard of Coinbase, and we've had folks from different divisions of Coinbase on the show, but this is our first time speaking with Akhil Ibsa. Welcome to the show. He is the head of corporate development and mergers and acquisitions at Coinbase. Akhil, thank you so much for joining.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, this is going to be a really fun one. I mean, you guys have done eight or so acquisitions or mergers in 2025 alone. Is that correct?
We have done eight this year, and we have done more than 40 over the life of the company.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So I think I wish we could do a lightning round and go into each and every 40, but maybe later on in the show, we'll do a lightning round of the eight in 2025.
Yeah. I got a question. Akhil, do you get vacation? Do you get vacation hours over there? 40's a lot, man.
Yeah. It's been a banner year for us. Coinbase is not for the faint of heart. I try to take vacation where I can, but things are definitely busy.
Yeah, no, there was a huge, huge announcement that just completely blew up crypto Twitter recently with Echo and Sonar, and we could kind of go into that in much more depth. But let's just zoom out into a little bit about a vignette of your life. Who are you? What was your background, and why did Coinbase realize, hey, you're the perfect guy for the gig?
Sure. So let's see. I started my career in investment banking, so traditional finance. I was at Deutsche Bank in their investment banking group. Got to work on a lot of different types of transactions. So mergers and acquisitions, which obviously I'll get to a little bit later, capital markets and advisory type work. And, I really have always had a love for technology and wanted to end up in technology. And so following my two-year analyst program, I joined LinkedIn, where I spent some time in the mergers and acquisitions group there. Got to lead a number of different M&A deals and some investments. And, in all of my wisdom as a 20-something-year-old, I thought, maybe I wanted to start a company. So I actually took a little bit of a weird detour into product management, built some product for LinkedIn. And, like a lot of people, I think, who enter the crypto space, I was proverbially like red-pilled. For sure. The love for technology and the idea that blockchains could be this new kind of innovative technology layer that makes it cheaper, faster, more efficient, to move value around. I think I just got extremely excited about that concept and joined Coinbase. And so that was about, 6.5 years ago now, and has been quite the ride since then.
Wow, that's awesome. Where do we start? I mean, there's so many different avenues that we could go down, but I guess if we like just take it as a high level, what's Coinbase's strategy with mergers and acquisitions? Is this something that you would consider like a really aggressive strategy? Is it more defensive? Is it high growth? How do you categorize it?
Yeah. So I think our M&A strategy is really just an extension and a tool that we use to accelerate our roadmap. We have a pretty ambitious vision. We want to create an open financial system for the world and create more economic freedom in the world. And we want to do so by being the sort of primary account for this emergent asset class and the growing on-chain economy. We did so initially with a kind of pure retail brokerage business and have now extended that to an institutional business, a developer business, and have a lot of different products. But I think the one kind of underlying theme is we want to be the sort of primary account for this emergent asset class. And when we think about M&A, it's really just a tool that can help us push that forward a little bit faster. You can always build products, you can always partner to accelerate certain products that you're offering. M&A is just another kind of tool in the tool belt to help accelerate that. And so I would say, our strategy has been really aligned with the overall kind of company and product strategy. And I would say from an aggression standpoint, it is, I would say, at least in 2025, a pretty aggressive strategy, and we're excited about the impact that it's going to have.
Totally. And no, I love the vision. And I'm curious, just, tactically, what's your primary focus right now, in terms of verticals that you're looking at, kind of to build out that whole vision?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we have a couple of different things that we're excited about. I'll kind of tick through each of them and then happy to dig into any one in particular if that's of interest. So the first is derivatives. Derivatives, I think, for your audience, it's a large portion of all of the collective revenue that exists in crypto. And we bought Deribit, which was a $3 billion deal that I think helped push our path forward there with the number one options player.
I think that was also
And
the largest crypto acquisition by dollar amount ever, right?
it was,
Don't
yes,
just
to
breeze
date.
over that. You're on the pod. You could gloat a little bit.
Yeah, no, it was the largest deal in crypto history and remains the largest deal in crypto history. So we're very excited about that, but we think there could be more to be done there. Derivatives is just such a massive opportunity, and so
Totally.
we're excited to continue to spend time there. The second category we're excited about is broadly what we would characterize as on-chain consumer and infrastructure. So we obviously have Base, we have TBA, we have all these sort of on-chain businesses that previously were pretty small as a relative contribution to the overall company and have now really kind of reached real scale and product market fit. And so we're kind of looking for different opportunities to help augment and accelerate those businesses. Echo is a great example of that. Helps bring together builders that are looking for capital and then market participants that are looking to access new and interesting projects. Spindle also fits in that category. An on-chain ads platform that brings together builders and our distribution and monetizes that relationship. And so we're constantly on the lookout for new innovative kind of adjacencies in the on-chain consumer infrastructure space. The third, I would say, is really around this everything exchange concept. So we kind of put down the gauntlet, I would say, a couple of months back to say Coinbase wants to be the everything exchange. And historically, we've been sort of like this single asset class type trading experience for retail institutions and the like. And we've sort of made the strategic decision to want to offer everything that people want to trade and do so in a way that feels authentic to us, which is on crypto rails. So that's things like prediction markets, that's tokenized equities, and hopefully more tokenized assets to come alongside our traditional crypto buy sell business. There's constantly going to be sort of assets that'll help us accelerate that, but that's, I would say, the third one. The fourth, I would say, is stablecoins and payments. So unless you've been living under a rock, stablecoins and payments have really, I think, come into the forefront for not even just people on crypto, but really, I would say anybody who spends any time in fintech and financial services more broadly. The idea that stablecoin rails are a faster, cheaper, more global rail to send and receive money, I think, is a very interesting concept for us and really helps push utility in crypto forward. And so we're excited to look at potential acquisitions that could accelerate that too.
Yeah.
There's probably a handful more, but those are, I think, a good list to start us off.
Hell yeah.
All right, Crypt Nation fam, are you interested in effortlessly growing your Bitcoin portfolio? Because I know I am. The Bitcoin credit card by Gemini earns you Bitcoin back on every purchase. Use it like any credit card. You buy lunch, you get gas, any of your weekly grocery expenses, and you'll earn up to 4% back instantly in Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos straight into your account. All that with no annual fee. And right now, you can grab $200 of Bitcoin. That's right, a $200 Bitcoin welcome bonus with the Gemini credit card. It is the easiest way to start building your Bitcoin stack. Go to Gemini.com/card to learn more. Terms apply. See the link in the description for more information regarding rates and fees.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
No, I think it's a fantastic way to start us off. And kind of along those lines, I believe you've described Coinbase as building the operating system for crypto rather than becoming a traditional bank, which is a really interesting way of putting it. And I think it kind of helps paint the picture for the listeners and for the general users and all of them. What does that mean, though, in terms of infrastructure and the services that you're acquiring?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I'd say thematically for Coinbase, you know, operating system is a good way to kind of frame it. The other way we like to frame it is, you know, this primary account for this, you know, emerging on-chain economy. And, you know, I use that word primary account, I think, quite deliberately. And in some cases, our products will be directly user-facing. So traditionally, that's where Coinbase started. We were a brokerage business and, you know, extended that to institutions. And, you know, we've increasingly now been investing quite aggressively in the infrastructure layer too. And so that means things like our crypto as a service business that helps power other brokers that want to offer crypto buy sell. It also means custody for large institutions that want to park their funds with us. And so I think the general through line is we want to sort of be this primary home or primary account for this asset class, both in terms of user facing products like our core trading business, but also infrastructure products to help power others to push the on-chain economy forward. And, you know, honestly, I think our net, I think goal is just to create economic freedom in the world. And we think that this, you know, new asset class and the crypto rails is a much more efficient way to do that than the traditional system.
Yeah, it is. And when you guys are doing this at such scale, again, was it 40 since inception and 8 in the last year? How do you balance build versus buy decisions? Because Coinbase already has such a significant kind of internal engineering resources at your disposal. How do you kind of balance between those two?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we actually think about the menu of options as buy, build, partner, or invest. And there's various characteristics that we sort of look at and try to litigate on, you know, when is a particular capability better to buy versus to potentially build. And if you just look at that lens, the cases for when we buy typically include one, you know, is there some inherent thing about this capability that is very difficult for us to replicate internally. Mm-hmm. One example of that would be something like what we saw with Deribit. Deribit was, you know, the leading crypto options player on the planet that had significant network effects because of how much liquidity that existed within the exchange. Very difficult to replicate that internally. Mm-hmm. The second piece is, you know, is there some reason why we need to enter into this capability much faster than what we could possibly do from a build perspective. Crypto, obviously, as your listeners very well know, moves extremely, extremely fast. And sometimes it, you know, necessitates us making a quick and very concentrated large bet to get into a market much faster than, you know, what would be possible with us building. And in some cases, you know, markets haven't necessarily formed yet. So, you know, as one example, we were pretty early on a number of, I would say, early categories like crypto and the intersection between AI. You know, we were pretty early on a couple of things. And those tend to be more better investment opportunities when these markets are much earlier or experimental in nature. And, you know, we kind of want to participate, but maybe it doesn't make sense to buy it and own it quite yet.
Yeah, that's awesome. It, kind of along those same lines, where do some of the synergies that, you know, might or might not exist between Coinbase Ventures and your division at, you know, M&A and corporate development? Do you guys like take a look at those guys first or I don't know. I'll just leave it open-ended.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. the individual who runs Coinbase Ventures and I joined within about a month of each other.
Awesome.
And so it's and he's actually one of my closest friends at the company. And so from that alone, there's quite a bit of synergy. And he and I joke that, you know, he kind of lives 6 to 12 months ahead of where I live, just given the places where he spends his time. He spends a lot of his time in the earliest stages of, you know, early categories in crypto, whereas I'll spend time more on, you know, where are there capabilities and products that have, you know, near-term markets that have formed around them, have significant product market fit, and oftentimes captive operating businesses. And so I would say from a synergy standpoint, we work, you know, closely with the Ventures team, and, you know, often there is overlap on categories or capabilities that we're both looking to buy or potentially invest in. But often it's the case that they operate, you know, much, much earlier stage than we do on the M&A side.
That makes a ton of sense. I feel like I don't know if it's just me and like my my news flow and my sources and stuff, but I feel like TradFi hasn't made that many like quick crypto acquisitions. It feels like it's just been maybe crypto companies acquiring smaller crypto companies, but you haven't heard of like, you know, JP Morgan Chase like acquiring something like I guess is the premise of the question wrong because it's like, no, I'm dumb. Like you're just missing all the news, or is that actually true?
I think there's some truth to that, Bryce. So well, here's how I would sort of characterize it. Over the last 6 to 7 years, M&A and the broader capital markets in crypto have undergone, I would say, fairly sizable shifts. So, you know, when I first entered into the scene, you know, in 2019, there wasn't a ton of crypto M&A really at all. It was us and maybe one other potential, maybe a handful of other players in crypto. And most of those were centralized large exchanges. And, you know, I think if you fast forward to now, the buyer universe has expanded considerably, but has stayed, I would say, relatively fixed within crypto, but now increasingly fintech players. I think the drivers for that are regulatory clarity. So fintech players that have historically either been on the sidelines or have been less interested in making big bets in crypto have now kind of been emboldened to do that. You could point to Stripe, you could point to Robinhood, you can point to a number of these other fintech players that historically were kind of experimenting in crypto, but now are really kind of entering into the space in a meaningful way. The second piece I would say is companies like Gemini or Circle or Bullish, and a number of these crypto companies have gone public and now have public market currency to go finance M&A. And so I expect to see them, you know, show up a bit more. But I think you're right, Bryce, that the larger kind of TradFi's haven't historically been nearly as involved or making large bets on M&A. And I think that is the case today, but I don't think will be the case in the future. I think the primary driver around that, it's likely to going to be, you know, increased regulatory clarity. You know, I think for large banks and institutions, it's much more difficult, I would say, to participate in crypto without, you know, very, very clear rules. And yeah. I think as and when this asset class continues to mature, that I think you'll see much more participation and potentially consolidation after that.
And I think you're hitting the nail on the head. I see your CEO, Brian Armstrong, you know, posting videos from Capitol Hill talking about the Clarity Act. It feels like every week or something, and it feels like there's good progress. And we're really excited about that. And so is that something that kind of needs to pass and get some legislation memorialized before we could, like you said, have like the big players, the banks, these large, you know, multi-billion dollar, sometimes trillion dollar fiduciaries start to play in the market that you're playing in?
I think for that segment, the answer, I mean, I can't speak for, you know, any individual specific name, but if you look historically at, you know, early asset classes or early technologies that were in their infancy and largely experimental that reached massive scale, you know, new segments of participants get unlocked generally when you start to see regulatory clarity. Yeah. And I think that is absolutely the case in financial services, and you're inherently dealing with people or institutions' money. And in, you know, in that circumstance, I would say that it's even more important that there be regulatory clarity for people in that segment to really start to activate. And so I'd say, you know, I view it similar to the internet. The internet was, you know, kind of a bunch of weirdos like you and me, and yeah. We were experimenting on, you know, moving information around the world through these like, you know, linked web pages sitting on a Mosaic browser, and, you know, has obviously changed into this massive multi-trillion dollar industry that exists today. And if you recall, I mean, I don't know, way back in the day, like people wouldn't even put their credit card information into an internet browser. And that's obviously since changed, and you have multi-hundred-billion-dollar industries based on that concept alone. And so I'd say, you know, maybe not to be too grand, but yeah, that, you know, I think TradFi will definitely activate. I think regulatory clarity will help accelerate that. And overall, I think it's good and net positive for the ecosystem. I mean, I think we're all kind of in this to see crypto in the hands of everybody in the world and, you know, really try to disintermediate what, you know, traditional financial system has to offer. So,
yeah, that point about the credit cards on the internet just made me laugh. My dad, when I got into crypto and all that kind of stuff, he was like, crypto, this is insane, you know, years and years ago. And then he was telling me a story, you know, way after the fact, and crypto kind of like, you know, actually worked out. He goes, you know, it reminds me of when your grandma refused to put money into an ATM. And she thought that she just like, this is insane. I'm never going to use an ATM. And then of course it became like the main way that people like, you know, get money, you know, deposit their paychecks and, you know, could get the money out and all that kind of stuff. And so he's like, I see it kind of as like, you know, that next development. And obviously, it's kind of a crude parallel, but I think it, you know, comes to bear that, you know, these new technologies are scary. And I think the regulators might be also scared, but starting to accept. We saw the Genius Act, that like, you know, has, you know, basically now the Secretary of the Treasury is like, because of the Genius Act, we're going to have like, you know, a 10x growth in stable coins by the end of the decade, like in 5 years, which is crazy to think about. And like what that's going to do to market caps in crypto and all that kind of stuff. But I'm not sure if you're a lawyer, and certainly don't want any question here to be a leading question as if you're providing legal advice or anything like that. But what are the sticking points? What regulatory clarity is needed? What are people so unclear about?
Yeah. You know, I'd say I am not a lawyer. And, you know, I think my observation is, you know, if you rewind the clock to the prior administration, it was extraordinarily unclear which assets were securities or not securities. And some of the fundamental notions for, you know, how crypto operates, you know, decentralized, permissionless, you know, in some ways having an element of privacy, were just, I guess, fundamentally not compatible with the existing regulatory framework. And, you know, from my perspective, that was a massive barrier to growth and adoption within the crypto industry. And, you know, I think things like that is, I think, probably top of mind, at least for me, you know, areas that, you know, are just fundamentally incompatible with, you know, what crypto actually is as an asset class. And so when these sorts of things start to get clarified, it makes the rules very clear. And when the rules are very clear, then, you know market participants can sort of start to activate in the space. And overall, I guess, matures the asset class. And I think your, you know, broader theme, Bryce, is right that, you know, these things are early. They are early, scary technologies, and it takes time for people to both wrap their arms around it and for regulators to wrap their heads around it. But over time, I think that, you know, we've seen tremendous progress in this on this. And, you know, I'm confident that it'll continue.
Yeah. And kind of along those lines, I mean, when we're looking at the different markets and bridging TradFi and crypto and looking at all these different moving parts, one of the things that I saw recently was Larry Fink going full throttle on 60 Minutes about tokenization and crypto. And I'm sure you guys saw this too. Some of the listeners probably saw this. It was awesome to see. And it's been interesting to see him go from kind of skeptical about it to just a full on bull. But, you know, Coinbase wants to get involved with similar stuff, speaking about kind of just bringing traditional equities on chain, tokenizing different versions of them. I want to know as much as you can tell us about this without putting your job at risk. But I saw that Coinbase has been looking into a number of these different things, you know, looking at trying to bring some of these traditional equities on chain, or at least have tradable versions of them.
Yeah, and I did see some kind of index as well that was launched that had like real world, you know, stocks and stuff. So,
yeah, I think so. Look, we've been reasonably public, I would say, about, you know, our plans here, and, you know, I can give you a flavor for what's been announced, and, you know, maybe a flavor for, you know, what we're excited about. And so, you know, as part of the Everything Exchange strategy, we want to offer things like tokenized equities. And then I think taking a step back, like, why is tokenization important? Tokenization, in my opinion, is important because we think crypto rails are just a better infrastructure for providing global liquidity and global access. I think tokenized equities is interesting, but, you know, taking things a step further, it could be much more interesting to have more novel assets that are tokenized and globally available for people to participate. And so I'd say in general, we are quite excited about tokenization. We want to offer tokenized assets to our customers because we think that, you know, crypto rails are just a better infrastructure for facilitating global capital markets. It actually ties in quite nicely with, you know, why we're excited about Echo. The deal that we just did there, we think that, you know, tokenized assets and making those available to our customers is just a better means of, you know, facilitating capital markets globally.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that, because we're seeing this happen on the TradFi side. We clearly see them wanting to get involved with crypto. We see ETFs, we see different basket ETFs, we see all these different forms of the TradFi, like banks and asset managers, wanting to provide some sort of crypto service. And now, you know, with like yourselves, with these, a lot of these crypto players, we're also seeing them do this kind of opposite approach where they're saying, well, let's actually provide some of these equities. Except the difference is that the crypto side saying, let's keep things on chain. And you mentioned that you think that it's a better way to do things. I guess, why is it a better way to do things? Because you guys could easily go out and just say, hey, we're going to allow people to trade stocks on Coinbase the normal way. But you guys are going about it a little bit of a different way and saying, we want this to be tokenized because we think it's superior.
Yeah. So I think it comes down to, why are blockchains a better infrastructure for moving value around? And I think the reason for that is that they are internet native. They are accessible by really anybody with a phone and or a computer and an internet connection, as opposed to being subject to, you know, in some cases, a few century old, you know, centralized financial system. And so, sure, we could offer regular way equities without any sort of tokenization elements, but it's not authentic to Coinbase. You know, we think that, you know, crypto rails are a better infrastructure for, you know, global trade, global payments, global capital markets. And, you know, I would just say it's just more authentic to us to do that in a much more crypto native way, because we think that, you know, all markets will be on chain eventually because it's better infrastructure. And, you know, offering tokenized equities, I think, is just sort of the first step in that direction.
Yeah. Plus, who needs another like just normal brokerage account?
Yeah.
Like it's been pretty well grokked, you know. So no, I think it's cool. I love your innovation forward attitude just across the company. And I do want to spend some time kind of digging into the meat and potatoes of Echo, the most recent sort of acquisition. You guys just worked really hard on this. So first off, congrats on getting this done. But what does it mean for Coinbase's users? Tell us a little bit about the story, because everybody knows, or everybody who's like, hooked up to crypto Twitter knows about Kobe, who was one of the original sort of founders or early employees. What's going on with this?
Yeah, so we are extremely excited about Echo. So Echo, what is it? It is essentially a platform that enables founders to find market participants and facilitate primary capital raises. And, you know, we think that it's taking a step back, helping us reimagine capital formation. It's all too often that founders find it very difficult to find investors to invest in their projects. And then conversely, we hear from, you know, participants on our platform that, you know, they want to participate in some of these newer projects much earlier in the life cycle. And Echo kind of helps us bring those two things together. And, I think just dovetailing off of a lot of what I said around capital formation, you know, helps us push forward this concept of capital formation happening on chain and it being inherently more global and permissionless. Today Echo will continue to operate as a, you know, standalone platform, and you should expect to see us integrate, you know, key capabilities of both their Echo product as well as their new Sonar product, and, you know, help kind of push the fold on, you know, capital formation on chain.
I love it. So is Echo and Sonar, are these platforms that like are some of our listeners who might not even be accredited, is that something they can use so they could start to get early opportunities? Or is this really just for your qualified high net worth individuals?
Yeah, it's a good question. So not a lawyer, but what I can say is that, you know, we do want to provide access to these opportunities to, you know, users on our platform. And we will do so in a way that's obviously fully safe, transparent, and compliant. But we do have to obviously be subject to the laws in which govern, you know, us as a U.S. listed publicly traded company. But I think in general, we are very excited about on-chain capital formation. We think that Echo gets us, you know, tremendously much further in that. And we're excited to help bring these opportunities to our customers.
Yeah, no, I'm super excited about it. I haven't participated on an Echo raise, but I remember, I think it was earlier this summer, they did just a massive raise for Plasma, the XPL token. And this was something where, you know, I'm trading around, people are talking on Telegram, oh, do you get an allocation, this and that? I was like, yeah, I'll see how it goes. Maybe I'll like, you know, see, you know, a week or two after the raise. It sold out in like 30 seconds or something like that. And like, it was like a $500 million raise. And so, you know, talk a little bit about like just the, you know, I guess the, like, how did that happen or the power of this platform? Is it just because like anybody anywhere in the world can access it? And yeah, what happened there? Cause that was like a huge, huge blow up.
I think, you know what? Yeah, it's, I think you'll continue to see more of that. It just, in my opinion, speaks to the pent up demand that exists for, you know, global permissionless capital markets. People want access to these projects and founders want access to investors that are interested in their projects. And, you know, historically, and, you know, I've been in, you know, Silicon Valley technology now for close to 15 years. And, you know, it's, you can't go to any coffee shop without hearing about founders and investors trying to find, you know, opportunities to connect and work together on projects. And so I think from our perspective, an internet native, crypto native platform that allows for founders and investors to connect on, you know, capital opportunities for primary raises is, I think it just speaks to the demand that exists there.
Awesome. Well, I had a little something planned. I wanted to do a little bit of a lightning round for the eight sort of acquisitions this year. Does that sound good? Just like, you know, getting people a high level, you know, 30-second minute overview of each of these and kind of how they tie into their experience.
Let's do it.
Okay. So, and again, I'm not sure if I've got these all in order, but let's start with Roam. What's Roam?
Yeah. So Roam was an on-chain crypto native browser application that was started by a number of individuals, two of whom had come actually through acquisitions to Coinbase before. We were kind of embarking on a path to build and execute on TBA, which I'm sure you and your listeners know about. We just thought that this team was exceptional and wanted to bring them in to help accelerate our path there. They're two, three individuals that, you know, we just thought the world of, and we kind of call it a boomerang story because some of these, you know, two of those folks were at Coinbase before and they boomeranged back to Coinbase through the acquisition.
I like that. And you did mention Spindle a little bit, but yeah, Spindle, tell us more.
Yeah, Spindle was an on-chain or is an on-chain ads platform. The impetus for this one was we kept hearing from our builders, both on Base and just people who are building in the ecosystem, that they want access to Coinbase distribution. If you're building on Base, you have, you know, tooling and infrastructure, but how can I actually access Coinbase's users? And so Spindle is essentially the link between builders and our distribution and enables us to monetize that relationship through ads. So as a builder on Base or as a builder in the ecosystem, you can log on to Spindle and you can run ads directly on our Coinbase surfaces and drive user acquisition to your app.
I love it. That sounds awesome. And, you know, Ironfish is the next one. I remember when this one came out, this was a big privacy play, I believe.
That's right. Yeah. So we believe that privacy is a fundamental tenet, I would say, just of human rights. And that's, I think, certainly my belief. And, you know, I think that blockchains are an incredible, you know, kind of new innovation and infrastructure to facilitate, you know, global permissionless decentralized trade and commerce and payments. But I think what is somewhat missing, I would say, from that is privacy. You know, all of these transactions are recorded on a public ledger. You know, I don't know about you guys, but if I'm sending somebody a Venmo after dinner, I'm hitting the private button that doesn't display that on the feed. And so it's, you know, from our perspective, if, you know, Base has sort of become this wild resounding success as, you know, one of the top L2s, you know, we sort of need to figure out a way in which we can enable more use cases and drive more adoption through privacy preserving type experiences across our different surface areas. And the team is exceptional there, and we're excited to see what they're going to do this year.
Yeah, on the privacy note, I don't know if I'm just picking up an Easter egg or I got my tinfoil hat on or anything, but I noticed Coinbase's main Twitter handle has a shield on it now. And I know all of the Zcash folks all have a shield on their Twitter handle. Is there any overlap or,
oh, man,
our lips are sealed?
I am totally the wrong person for that. Maybe. I don't know.
Could be. You never know. Yeah, Zcash had an incredible run. I think the whole privacy meta is starting to really take roost, and could be just on the tailwinds of a little bit of a more, you know, regulatory friendly environment. But let's talk. Oh, we talked about Dare a bit, so I'll spare you on this one. But let's talk about Liquify.
Yeah. So Liquify was really the first push for this broader end to end capital formation stack. That, you know, we're kind of pulling together with both Liquify and Echo. And I think the way to think about what Liquify is it's more or less a Shareworks Carta type product for crypto. You're a founder or a builder and you want to do a token. They help you with investor management, with vesting schedules for both your investors as well as your employees. And if you think about where does this kind of all tie the full suite together, you know, Liquify helps with company and token creation. It also helps with investor management. Echo helps with private fundraises, and Sonar helps with public token sales. And then Coinbase obviously helps with distribution and listing. And so between that, we want to kind of build this kind of end-to-end solution for capital formation where a founder can go from idea to token to listing. You know, as quickly as possible, and then hopefully help bend the curve on more and more on-chain businesses, both raising capital and starting on-chain.
Man, it's really hitting home for me right now, just how beautiful this vision is that, you know, again, runs through the veins of Coinbase. It's not just, hey, we're going to be, you know, the best crypto exchange, which you are, but it's really about, we want to provide all of these different tools and resources for builders so that, you know, you could, you know, continue to have, you know, more crypto companies, more crypto launches, like all that kind of stuff. Like you're really attacking it from both the consumer and I guess like the service provider level, giving tools to everybody. So it's really cool. It's definitely, you know, this lightning round has made that very clear. Let's talk about Open, OPYN.
Yeah. So Open, was is a really strong team of individuals that have spent time sort of in the inner workings of how do we bring DEXs and, you know, decentralized financial services to Coinbase. And, you know, we fundamentally believe that, you know, all markets will end up on chain. And these two individuals were an exceptional addition, I would say, to our institutional business that's actively thinking through, you know, many different initiatives around decentralized exchanges and, you know, how do we sort of continue to innovate across our different markets products. So we obviously have the Deribit exchange, we have our futures exchange, we have an international exchange, and, you know, these individuals sort of serve as a link for how do we bring more and more of that activity on chain.
Love it. And we talked about Echo, but finally, I want to bring Sensible to the lightning round.
So Sensible was previously an application that enabled you to receive DeFi yields through a really easy to use interface. We were investors in the company and you know, I'd known Jacob and Zach and the team there for a number of years. And we had sort of reached a point in our respective journeys where our visions were beginning to converge, where, you know, Coinbase wanted to be the everything exchange and provide access to decentralized financial services in a really easy to use format. And our visions were totally aligned. And so we acquired them and announced that a few weeks back. And now those individuals are leading a lot of those efforts at Coinbase and, you know, the perfect people to do that because that's what the company did before.
Mm. Beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, what a lightning round. Dude, it's just so much to unpack. There's so much to talk about, but it got my brain stirring. I love thinking about the theoreticals, the wildest case scenarios. So, got a question for you.
He's a dreamer. That's why we keep him around, Akil.
I'm the wild card over here. But if you could theoretically, keyword theoretically there, acquire any company or any type of company, you don't have to worry about the details, the money, the regulations. You don't have to worry about anything. It magically happened. Who would it be? Or I guess what would it be and why?
Yeah. Good question. You know, I can't, I would say, speak specific names, but I can give you categories. How's that?
Okay. Yeah, that's perfect.
I think I'm personally exceptionally high conviction and excited about what's happening in prediction markets. And, you know, I would say the category itself has obviously been around for quite some time. I do think that crypto, given its, you know, inherent, you know, decentralized, permissionless nature, gives it a lot more interesting characteristics. And I think I do fundamentally believe that prediction markets will be on chain. But I think that the product and the category is just going to evolve in ways that we can't even possibly fathom today. You know, I get the same feeling in my gut around prediction markets as I did when I joined the crypto industry back in 2017, where, you know, it's sort of this underlying concept or primitive that is sort of permeating and use cases are starting to stem from it. And, you know, you can't really see how it's going to evolve, but you know it's going to be something really important in the world. And I think with the election, that kind of really brought it onto the scene. And I think you're just starting to see some of those use cases start to take off. And so I'd say, you know, I'm very excited about what's happening in that category. And it's probably the one I would pick.
Awesome. That's a great one. I actually just, right before we hopped on, got a little flash news alert that Polymarket is going to now be available in the United States here. They said within the next few weeks, but we'll see. Sometimes those things take a little bit of time to actually unfold and hit the market and all that kind of stuff. But I believe Kalshi is available in most of the states, and it's going to be incredible to see. Hopefully, you know what Coinbase does down the line, if anything. You know, I think Polymarket just get a $2 billion investment from Intercontinental Exchange? Or am I just dreaming? I think that was right. $2 billion bucks. Yeah, that's a big one. that's another big one. So before we kind of close out, and you know, we greatly appreciate you spending so much time with us today. I just want to, you know, as much as you can share. I know you're you've got a public company, right? And so there's certain things you can and can't share. But I just, what's your view on like the market where we're at right now, with, you know, between Bitcoin and altcoins? Do you have just like a high level like markets take?
Yeah. So I'd say we've been in a pretty protracted period of high volatility, I'd say, for a decent chunk of time. you know, there have been a lot of, I guess, net new, call it drivers of, you know, volatility and growth in crypto in the last 12 to 18 months. You have the digital asset treasuries, you have, you know, the explosion of stable coins and payments, you have fundamental market structure changes around, you know, the ETFs, you have regulatory clarity. I mean, you know, you can't really look too far to see more bull signals, I would say, that's kind of carrying this market cycle. I think it's anyone's guess where we're at in the cycle. You know, we have been in historically, you know, bull and bear cycles are anywhere from 12 to 36 months and, you know, can expand and contract. And so I'd say, you know, I'm hopeful that we close out and have a really strong rest of 2025. And, you know, I'm excited to see all the things that Coinbase has to offer, as well as, you know, a lot of the things that we're seeing around regulatory clarity from a macro standpoint. And, you know, I think we'll have to kind of go into 2026 fresh eyed and, you know, see where things are at. I'm personally quite bullish on, you know, the next, you know, 12 to 18 months. And I think that there's a lot of secular tailwinds with what's happening in crypto, but, you know, it's really anybody's guess. You know, the industry kind of moves and breathes and shakes as it sees fit. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, no, it is wild. I mean, especially, you know, just, you know, valuations, it seems like in the liquid markets just got completely reset after the 10-10, October 10th, sort of Black Friday event that we had. Did that affect private market valuations at all? Like, do you see things like as particularly expensive or particularly cheap or kind of fair right now? And I guess that'll be kind of the closing question.
Yeah. So, you know, I think in private market valuations, there's definitely a little bit of a lagging effect relative to public market valuations. You typically don't see an immediate correction, especially if you're looking at things at the seed stage. But over time, those things can sort of start to drip down and affect private market valuations. I think what you typically see is that there's a stronger correction in later stage, and then early stage remains largely untouched. That said, I would say crypto markets are a little bit different. And, you know, I would say for, you know, companies that are looking to launch a token, you know, that's obviously impacts the capital markets on the liquid side, impact how they're thinking about valuations and, you know, their potential to go out with a token. And so I'd say that, you know, there's a lagging effect. We haven't seen a tremendous impact, but, you know, those sorts of things, you know, like 1010, they shake the religion a little bit. And, you know, I think people try to do a little flight to safety. And, but, you know, to be totally honest, I mean, as brutal as it was, I'd, you know, kind of expected a little bit more of an absolute bloodbath. You know, I think for a massive, you know, market correction like that. And so I think that, to me, it's just a signal of maturation in the crypto industry and maturation in liquid markets. It obviously was brutal, but, you know, I do think that the asset class has shown some resiliency and, you know, valuations will correct. But I think over time, it's, you know, it's just great to see that the industry is starting to mature.
Love it. Sir, thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Akhil Ibsa, Head of Corporate Development and Mergers and Acquisitions at Coinbase. Where can people follow along with your story? And everybody knows where to follow Coinbase, but are you on Twitter? Do you have a blog or anything like that that we could post in the show notes?
Yes, yes. On Twitter, I think it's _Akhil0. I can send that over to you.
Yeah, that'd be perfect. And, it is. I'm looking at it right now, _Akhil0.
Sweet. Follow. Yeah, that's probably the best place to follow me.
Awesome. This has been a true treat. We greatly appreciate your time and the Coinbase team for helping make this happen. So without further ado, we're going to let you go. Enjoy your day. And hopefully we'll have you back maybe same time next year. And there's going to be 12 mergers and acquisitions that we could do a lightning round on. But take care.
All right. Take care. Thanks, guys.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. Not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MACK25.